You're listening to a DM podcast.
G'day, guys. Welcome to the Talking with TK podcast. My special guest today is Matty Adamson. Matt is a former professional rugby league player who played 175 games across the NRL for Parramatta Eels, Penrith Panthers, and also the Canberra Raiders. And he also played 72 games for the Leeds Rhinos in the Super League. His representative career includes two State of Origins for New South Wales, one Tri-Nations game during the Super League period, and also represented Australia on five occasions during the Super League season as well. Welcome to the podcast, Matty Adamson. G'day, Matty.
Hey, buddy. How you going?
Doing good, man. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on, mate. To be honest, you know, I just gave you a few raps about the Super League season. That's when I really, really noticed you, and I still think that was your breakout season. But we'll get to that a little bit later in the show because I want to kick things off. Matty Adamson and the Adamson family from Taree. Tell me a little bit about your upbringing and how the Adamsons actually got to Taree.
Well, I guess in essence, to go back, you know, way down the track, mum and dad, my father grew up in Kempsey, my mum grew up in Wauchope. There were floods in that region, mate, back in the 50s, and mum and dad both ended up in Taree. Philip and I were both born with only two sons of my mum and dad, John and Alison, and like any young country kid, mate, you grew up playing rugby league in the winter and cricket in the summer.
Yeah, mate, you and Phil, you were blessed with height. I wasn't. I'm 5 foot five, mate. So give me some advice. What'd you do?
My mum's 5 foot five.
There you go.
Yeah,
so at least she's a Sheila, mate. I'm a dude, so. So, mate, what was it? Was it in the water? Was it something she made you eat regularly?
Mate, our pops used to, when we go out on the farm and help with the cattle and stuff, pop would put us in the rose garden and then spread manure around our feet. So, like the rose bushes, the manure would make the trees grow. That made me and my brother grow. So, that's how we got our height. Now, look, the old man, quite a tall guy. Dad was 6 foot, but it's in on dad's side of the family. So, you know, Tower's and my brother Phil being 6'5", and me being 6'3". Yeah, we were blessed with height, which was, you know, a good asset, you know, during our career.
Yeah, nice, mate. Now, you're in Noosa. Where's Phil these days, mate?
Phil's in Foster Tuncurry.
Ooh, so, nice.
Mum and dad are still in Foster Tuncurry, obviously originally from Taree, but Foster Tuncurry is a little bit more coastal, and I married a girl from Taree as well, and her parents are in Foster Tuncurry, so we had a lot of family made up that part of the world, but yeah. With COVID, won't go over it, but yeah, mate, 2 years, we haven't had the chance to see anyone, including my big bro, so that's all good.
Yeah, I can imagine how tough that is, mate, but, you know, in terms of your sporting career, because everyone knows you about rugby league, but the real thing is you're a cricketer. Talk to me a little bit about you growing up as a cricketer and, yeah, you made it, New South Wales and all sorts of events there.
Yeah, so as a kid, mate, I spent my days out the backyard, you know, with the Don Bradman style, you know, cricket stump and a golf ball. My dad was a golfer. My heart was more towards cricket. I spent hours and hours out the back just hitting balls against the wall, hitting balls in stockings and socks off the clothesline, just all that sort of stuff, you know. The young kid in the 80s, 90s, you grew up, you know, listening and looking and learning. And that was my passion. I was, you know, playing A-grade cricket in Taree at 14. You know, without big dating yourself, you're scoring hundreds. And I think my big breakthrough came in, I can't remember the year, I'll say 88. I think I was about 15. I went away to trial for, it was called the Touring Emus, the Emu Colts, which was regarded as under-21s team that was made up of the whole of New South Wales, excluding the metropolitan area. So it was Central Coast, you know, all the way up to the Lismore border,
yep,
all the way west to, you know, Broken Hill and those sorts of regions, and south to Wagga Wagga. So, yeah, anyone could make the Emu Colts under 21s. Rick McCosker at the time was the youngest ever. He made it as a 15-year-old.
Yep.
Or 15 and say whatever it was, 4 weeks. And I was selected, mate, at 15 years of age in like 2 weeks. And I think probably, I don't know, maybe I think I'm still the youngest ever. And, mate, we toured New Zealand, which was, you know, we went to King's Cross before we flew out. You know, again, I think it was back in 88. And I was just petrified, mate. I was just a young kid, never left home. But, you know, pretty incredible experience. I went across and there were blokes like, mate, my brain's gone dead. There were three guys that went on to play for New Zealand,
yep,
as Test cricketers. Sorry, being Chris Cairns, Vittori.
Chris Cairns?
Yeah.
Wow.
From that age. So I was 15, and they were in their late 20s, and then they went on to have established, you know, international cricket career. So we played against them in this one-off test match, as well as we toured around the South Island. So, incredible for a 15-year-old kid from Taree. And then on the back of that, I played in like a Tui's Cup match. I'm not sure whether you ever heard of those. But in the country rural areas back in the day, they'd have these Tui's Cup matches to promote cricket. There'd be three, New South Wales state players would come and play for, one would play for the Manning and the other one played for, the other group would play for Port Macquarie. And when I played again, I was still at 15 years of age. Greg Dwyer was involved with Western Suburbs and Greg Matthews played. He was involved with Western Suburbs cricket. Mark Waugh played. Yep. Mark Taylor played. They didn't quite break on the Australian scene at the time, but, Greg Dwyer invited me to come down to play with Western Suburbs Magpies cricket team, which is based out of Pratton Park there around Canterbury, Punch Bowl area. And I begged and begged and pleaded and pleaded. And Mum said, if you get a good job, son, you can go and do it. And I said, what's a good job? She said, something like in a bank. So I ran off and I did an exam, got a job in the bank. And Mother went away to Sydney. And 2 weeks into the job, I resigned and went and worked at Peter Wynn Sports Store.
Yeah, good.
And that was sort of a part of how my rugby league career bloomed. I played that season of cricket. I played a few first grade games, Trevor Chappell, Phil Marks, like back in those days. Angus Fraser was at Western Suburbs. Brad McNamara was the captain of Western Suburbs. And as I've already mentioned, we had Greg Matthews, Greg Dwyer. Yeah, we had a really strong team. They were one of the top clubs in the comp. And I dug me toes into first grade cricket, but it was tough. I was homesick. My brother was the only thing, mate, that kept me in Sydney.
Mate, you mentioned two names, and I loved watching them. Brad McNamara and also Greg Matthews. What did you learn from those two? Because they're quite professionals.
Yeah, Brad was, the buzzer was awesome for me. And, of course, then he went on to work with Channel 9 and after his cricket career, but he was just a true professional and very dedicated, where Mo was eccentric and, crazy. And I'll tell you a story. We were at Pratton Park and we're playing Manly and Phil Marks is batting. And he's hit one down the long on, I'm down there, and Mo was bowling. And, mate, I've dropped the catch, and Mo's come to me after the game. This is how he was like, mate. He just said, hey, dude, if you drop a catch off me ever again, you never play first grade cricket whenever I'm in the team. Yeah, you hear these stories, but, mate, it happened, mate. He put it on me, and I was like, wow. The following week, we played North Sydney at North Sydney Oval, and Trevor Chappell's playing. I was in as a gully, and Trevor Chappell's going back and cut one off Mo, and I've dived, and it's hit me fingertips. It would have been a screamer out. I caught it. Yeah, I've dropped it. The ball's really raced the boundary. I got up, chased it, slid to the fence, picked it up, returned into Greg Dwyer. GD's gone, great work, Matty. The over's finished. And I was like, is he going to do it again? And of course, he did, mate. He came over and he goes, I told you, if you ever drop a catch on my bowl ever again, you never play first grade, mate. And I never did. I never played another first grade game. But, my career then in rugby league, I came across Mo and, I joked about it. We talked about it. We laughed about it. We had a beer over it, and what it is what it is. But, great. Like, anxiety too, mate. Like, I grew up as a kid watching Greg Matthews, watching, these sorts of guys. And they were role models and heroes of mine. But, I mean, the other big story, and I think you may know it, is during my junior rep career, Adam Gilchrist and I became great mates. He was from Lismore. Gilly and I toured. We went to Dubbo on a New South Wales under 17 carnival. We were, none for 260-odd on day one. Gilly was 140-odd not out, and I was 100-something not out. We went and grabbed a case of Tui's twist tops and went and sat in the park. everyone will think it was me leading Gilly astray, but it was Gilly leading me astray. But we had that mateship, which he encountered, when he was playing for Australia. I'd go into the Sydney Test with Johnny Cartwright, with Freddie, with Brandy and these guys, and he gets tickets and we catch up and we swap, jerseys and stuff. So those memories for me as a kid and still today, mate, are really cherished memories, because Mark Waugh, somebody still to this day I have great admiration. Yep. It was a role model of mine as a young bloke even playing footy. I was lucky enough to rub shoulders when I went to Leeds. Steve Waugh was over there playing for Kent, to be able to walk into a dressing room and catch up with him and those sort of things. So I guess that's what sport creates for us, mate. So they were great times, for me, which was something I loved, but then, it was a bit of one of those sliding door moments where the opportunity for rugby league opened up and mate, I took it and never looked back.
Mate, I just want to ask about, you know, when Adam invites you into these cricket rooms, and the biggest thing, especially anywhere you go, is for me, is just observing and just seeing how people do things and do things differently. What was it? Did you pick up anything in particular from the Australian cricket team that you were able to bring back to your footy?
Very similar to what I learned from Steve Waugh, who was captain at the time, the intensity which and the processes they went through in the dressing room post the game. So we were fortunate enough on that sort of first day of those New Year's Day test matches, which were traditionally always held at Sydney, you know, for the Australian team. No matter who they were playing, you know, I started to look at that. I started to look up on whiteboards about the analysis and the breakdown of each individual player. And there were things at the time that were starting to come into, you know, rugby league. So that was a real eye-opener, you know, for me and what cricket were doing and the different things. And I was lucky enough, mate, at the time at Leeds Rhinos, I spent a week with Manchester United. Yeah. And it was a similar thing, you know. We're moving on in sort of 10-year, you know, timeframes here where, you know, different sports and different people and coaches and leaders, blokes like Ferguson and that are analysing, systemising, you know, structuring the game and putting things in place that allow everyone to know their role and responsibility. And, of course, you know, I'm getting ahead of myself here in the conversation, mate, and I apologise, but
no worries.
You go and work with a bloke like Craig Bellamy at Melbourne Storm, and he sort of, how can I put it, he put it all into one bundle but then simplified everything. You know, I just went, well, now I understand. Unfortunately, I was at 42 years of age when I first worked under Craig at the Melbourne Storm as the 20s coach, but he just simplified the game, you know, that all those system structures and what has to be done, but it's also met with, you know, honesty, integrity, you know, and passion and a real love for what you do. And, mate, you know, when you've had all those experiences over time, to do it under Craig for me was the greatest eye-opener of all time. But, I look back as cherished memories, mate.
I'm really glad you brought it up. We may as well chat about it now. How similar is the Melbourne Storm culture when you compare it to the Manchester United that you visited?
Well, like being a passionate Manchester United fan, it's not at the moment, which breaks my heart, you know, but under Fergie it was, you know, and they use a similar philosophy in regards to it, which is quite interesting with what happened at Melbourne's season at the end of this year with a couple of off-field incidents. But I was there the week David Beckham was sacked, and Fergie actually, I was sitting in his office and he said, "Now, Matty, I need you to leave the office. We've got quite a big press conference about to unfold." And the boy from Taree just said, "Hey, yeah, Fergie, what is it?" And he said, "Oh, we're about to sell, you know, David Beckham to Manchester United." And, of course, being a huge Man United fan, being there for a week with, you know, under the guidance of a guy called Clive Snell, who was our operations manager at the time, who gave me this opportunity. And it's sort of a bit further into it. Alan Smith had been at Leeds United. Yep. Smithy had been transferred to Manchester United. So because I had a prior relationship, drinking schooners with him at the Skyracket Leeds. Smitty welcomed me with open arms into Man United. So I sort of walked into the joint as a mate of, you know, Wayne Rooney, Cristiano Ronaldo, Ruud van Nistelrooy, Roy Keane, who was always my sporting idol, you know, during my career. But, yeah, it became a conversation where Fergie said, "Matty," you know, and he told me this after the actual event, he said, "David became too big for Manchester United." And he said, "Manchester United has always got to be the priority," but meaning the brand. Mm. He said, "Because the brand will be there forever and a day, but the Ruud van Nistelrooy's, the Fabian Barthez, the David Beckhams will come and go." You know, and then a few years later, like, he asked to be my idol, Roy Keane, who was the heart and soul of that club for so many years, and he went to Celtic. But, you know, that's Fergie's belief. That's what he believed in, and he implemented that. And I still believe there still aren't enough rugby league clubs, mate, doing that same philosophy, but Craig's the same. You know, you do what's right for the Melbourne Storm brand, and if you don't, you know, there's the door. Craig's got 14 years, 15 years, whatever it may be, of history now at the club, and when players go into the organisation, they're already going there with sort of a semi-passport, understanding what the core principles and values and beliefs are of that organisation.
Yep.
And if you don't adhere to it, mate, you know, you're not bigger than the game, you're not bigger than the Melbourne Storm brand, and that's what I admired about, you know, both organisations. And I'm going to be honest, mate, I as a player tried to create that at Penrith. Not that I knew it, mate. I was immature, probably still very young. And when we took leadership roles, myself, you know, Gerds, Johnny Cross, Carl McNamara at Penrith after, you know, Brandy retired, Cardi had left and gone to England, you know, you try and do that because that's that core value that's instilled in you as a young kid. Like for my dad and my grandfathers and that, what they instilled in me, which was honesty, integrity, you know, values, respect, and which respects people, your opposition, your referees, you know, property, principles, all those sorts of things. That's something I guess I look back in my career and go, that's what I was trying to do, but I just didn't have the right probably vocabulary skill sets to do it back then, you know, TK, in the sense that I came with passion and energy and all that, but I needed to learn a little bit of political prowess, which I didn't have. You know, as Johnny Cross always said to me, hey, big fella, where's your filter? Because I just used to shoot from the hip and say it as it is, and I piss people off. And, you know, as a part of me, some of the things that have unfolded in my career, I sort of go, I wish I had shut up and not said what I said. But there's other parts of me go, well, I was true to myself. You know, I was true to my value. And there were incidents that, you know, particularly, especially at Penrith, that, you know, unfolded, mate, that just were purely, that were my emotional feelings and opinion on what needed to be done to be successful and probably create what I saw later in my life at Manchester United. Because, you know, Manchester United, that time at Leeds Rhinos came after Penrith. And then what I experienced at Melbourne Storm, I was trying to create.
Yeah, you know, from everything you're describing and from hearing what you've spoken in the past, you seem like a really big team player. A lot of the time, you're like, you didn't need but the C. Who taught you to lead without the captaincy?
I just think it's what I learnt as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, cricket, you've got to be a team player. Like, everyone's got a role. You have opening batsmen, middle order batsmen, you have bowlers, you have wicket keepers, you know. But I certainly think from, you know, spending time on prop, like as a kid, mate, I'd play footy. The game would be full time. You'd pop your weight there in the truck. I'd jump on the back of the truck with my boots on. You go to the farm and off you go. And you knew each individual chore led to helping me pop and the property grow and evolve, you know. And I didn't have the vocab as a kid, but I just knew because you say, mate, go and pick the mushrooms, go and feed the cattle, go and feed the horses, go and fix that fence, go and do that. Yeah, you know, everything had a role. Fire started, go and put the fire out. You know, there was just those things that I think it was just those basic fundamental things I learned as a kid. You know, go and work with Dad. We had a transport company as well, which, you know, distribution business with trucks and semis and stuff. So freight had come from Sydney. You know, we distributed around Taree, Foster, Wingham, all the surrounding areas. And that industry was about team players. There was Dad had like 14-odd staff. They were all, you know, local rugby league players. Dad employed them because Dad played rugby league.
Yep.
So I grew up as a kid, like, looking at those guys going, oh, you know, again, team environment. So I guess, mate, again, the probably point I'm getting to in the question you've asked me, you want to implement it, but I guess my immaturity in those early to mid-20s, I didn't quite know how to, but it was short, the passion and desire was to do so. But, you know, living with Gerds, living with Freddie, living with Gowie when, you know, Freddie went to the Roosters again, that we were very much a team environment because, you know, we're sort of not the backbone, but we were integral parts of Penrith as a young team trying to grow and evolve as well. So, yeah, you respect to your mate, you respect to your mates, you know, Carl McNamara, Johnny Cross, as I said, these guys all played big parts in that team camaraderie ship of trying to build something that, you know, we were a great team, we wanted to be successful and, you know, but the mateship was more important.
Yeah, nice. Now, mate, just back to Alec Ferguson before we move on. How did you first get his contact details? How did you pitch him and what did you say?
This is the best story ever. So I wrote a letter, and I'm still like this today at 49 years of age. I got online and realised that I could, you know, send a letter to Manchester United. So just I was at Leeds. I had, like, Matt at, you know, Leeds Rhinos as an email address. They registered it when I first went to the club. So I just sent this letter up and said, I'm a former Australian rugby league player. I'm here at the moment playing for Leeds Rhinos. I'm heading into potentially a coaching role. So I'm really looking to go through a look, listen, learn process. And I'd love to learn from the greatest club in the world. Yeah, I kept it real simple. Again, just those respectful values you learn as a kid. Is there any chance, you know, I could attend a training session, a week-long camp to just visually, you know, look and see and listen to how the greatest club in the world, you know, implement success? It was just something simple like that, mate. And about 2 days later, I came home one day. My wife was young at the time. We just had our first baby, Charlotte. She was about 1 and a half. And Becky said to me, oh, who's Alex Ferguson? She's thinking Alex being female.
Yeah.
And I went, well, I got no idea. She'd think of some random set of emails. I'm going, Alex, I don't know what Alex. I went, or Alex Ferguson. I said, that's the bloke I wrote the email to. And so I went to the computer and he'd replied. So it had gone to this Clive Snell, who was the operations manager. He'd passed on to Fergie with this brief from me saying, could I come and have this experience? And he replied and said, oh, g'day, Matt, Alex Ferguson. Happy for you to come down here, you know, keep in contact with Clive Snell. He'll arrange everything. And mate, I don't know whether you know this, I played in a Challenge Cup final not long after this experience with a broken jaw and cheekbone. Yeah. And I've still got a letter here at home that Fergie wrote to me personally and signed it and said, Matt, you know, your bravery is commended, you know, on going onto a world stage in a Challenge Cup final, a Millennium Stadium in front of 80,000 people and playing the most brutal sport in the world. Yeah, it was an incredible letter. But that, again, that was how I got to go to Manchester United. But as I said, the day I walked in to put this Clive Snell met me at reception at Carrington Park and took me up to the cafeteria. Well, Alan Smith was there. And Smitty went, Matty, what are you doing here? In his broad Yorkshire accent. I said, I wrote a letter to Fergie to see if I could come down and, you know, just hang out and blah, blah. And it was the off-season. He said, oh, mate. And he went over and saw Darren Fletcher, this is Matt Adamson, played for Australia, played for Leeds Rhinos, Rio Ferdinand's, about, like, just like I was one of the mates. And they just all accepted me. So there's all those little things that happen in life that, you know, help the doors to open.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot from that as well.
Key lesson, but, Matty, is putting yourself out there, because it's the same thing as, like, people always ask you, how do all these awesome people come on your podcast? I go, well, I asked them and they're interested and we have a good chat. That's the same as you, but you got to put yourself out there.
Yeah, and sometimes your greatest strength in life can be also your greatest weakness. And later in life, mate, opening myself up to these sorts of people with different business opportunities with, you know, Chinese governments and different things, mate, I've done around the world has brought me a lot of heartache and a lot of, you know, disappointment, a lot of setbacks. And now I'm into a stage of life where it's really important to find that balance.
Yep.
Because obviously, you know, some of those setbacks and disappointments have massive impacts on your wife, your family, your relationships, your kids. You know, so yeah, you're right. But maybe if I just had stuck to sport, it may have played different. But yeah, look, and you're 100% right. And I look, you know, I still do it. I was on a conference call to a company in Los Angeles this morning who are a capital raising company for, you know, mining industries in the Australian market. So, you know, I do that. And my wife says, what are you doing this for? This is, you know, nuts. But like you're right. You sort of put yourself out there, and one day the stone will turn over, and you know, a bit of luck comes your way. So
yeah, totally agree.
That's sort of how I've lived life, mate, trying to get back on my feet after a few tough years.
For sure. Now, mate, we'll go back to the end of your cricket. Now, Phil's playing for Para, and now it's you going to. You went to open trial. Is that what happened?
Yeah, Brad Levy recruited my brother from a sort of mid-North Coast team. Schoolboy team and invited him to Parramatta in 88, mate. I was still at school. I was only 15. Philip was 17. So he was finishing year 12. So he went down to Parramatta and got, you know, put into their Jersey Flegg team. And then sort of 6-8 months later, I went down playing cricket with Western Suburbs, as I discussed. And I was at a game and Brad Levy saw me and he said, oh, you're Phil's brother. I said, yeah. He goes, oh, what are you doing? I said, I'm down here playing cricket. And he goes, oh, you're still playing footy? So I saw you play at Marathon Stadium, which was, you know, Newcastle Knights stadium in the day, at the same schoolboy carnival. He said, you're a bit young, you know. It was 12 months on. He said, oh, we're going to open trial this weekend. Would you like to come? And I went, mate, no kids from Tari get to play at Parramatta Stadium. I mean, Parramatta Stadium had just, you know, only been evolved in the last 18 months, you know, from old Cumberland Ground sort of thing. So, but I went to the trial. You know, Michael Erickson, who I live with as well as a Tari boy, Sparrow said, make sure you wear two different coloured socks. I did that, which if I had a shocker, mate, they probably would have said, don't pick that spastic over there. You know, being 6'3", probably you stand out a bit as well. But I went really well, played in the centres, and Gary Pethridge was there. He was the 19s coach, and I'll never forget it, mate. I only just talked to Cooker last week because it was his birthday. Cooker came up to me and said, mate, would you like to play in my Jersey Flegg team next year? I think you've got the ability to, you know, take a career, all the stuff that, you know, I say to young kids the past years when I was trying to get them at the Storm. And I said yes, and mate, away I went.
Mate, Michael Erickson was my dad's favourite player because my brother loves Parramatta, right? So we grew up at Quakers Hill. So I used to go to all the games, sit on the Brett Kinney Hill, but I think Dad was bold like Michael, so I think that's why he took a bit of a fancy to Michael. But he was a good player. He had a real crack, Michael Erickson.
Yeah, mate, Al Sparrow. He played Australian schoolboys, and he actually a bit of history. He was the first bloke to score against the Newcastle Knights the year they started when Parramatta played Newcastle in round one of, I think again it was 88 or 86 when the Knights come into it. Sparrow scored the first try. But, yeah, he was our neighbour, mate. He lived across the road from us in Tari, and all of a sudden Michael and Philip and I are all playing for Parramatta, which was quite bizarre.
Hey, you've got a few photos to show you that I've found. This one here, can you see that one on your screen? You kicking as Lucha, what are you, about 19, 20 years old there, bud?
Mate, that's in 91, so I'm probably playing either reserve grade or under 21s. In the 91 season.
2WS, mate.
Mad mullet, which I've just got back, my wife doesn't like. But anyway, I'm just going back the mullet to try and keep up with Ryan Pappenhausen, to be honest.
Mate, I had a mullet during COVID as well. It's gone now, but, mate, I loved it.
Love it, yeah.
But, mate, take me through, because at Parramatta, you were coming through the end of a cycle of them finishing premierships. You turn up 89, and there's still a couple. Kenny and Sterlo were still there. Was there some key traits that you kind of picked up from those two boys?
Well, Bert was a larrikin. He was full of fun and joked, and I loved and laughed and all that. And Sterlo was very intense, and but I really connected with blokes like Mark Laurie.
Yep.
He was from Warhope, just up the road from Taree. So he became a real father figure to me. Andrew Fitzhenry was a little bit older than me, but somebody I admired and respected. And I worked at the club as a development officer under a bloke called Mark Donkin.
Funny story, because my best mate's Grant Atkins, he's a referee.
Yeah.
And he knows Mark, because I was just on the phone to him, and he goes, ask Matty about Mark.
Yeah, there you go. So Donks and I are still mates. They were groomsmen at each other's weddings. So I worked under Donks. So that's how it all sort of started for me at Parramatta.
Okay, nice. And now, mate, Phil Gould, he's the one that recruited you over to the Panthers. Mate, what's the pitch like especially his State of Origin coach at the time?
Yeah, exactly. So we were managed by Wayne Beavis, and Beavis and Gus always been thick as thieves. And whether Beavis at the time was managing Gus's affairs at Penrith, I'm not sure. But Beavis rang myself and Philip and said, oh, can you come? And he was at Rose Hill there. His office used to be back in the day. And, mate, keep it simple. We just walked in. Gus was there. He said, boys, you can't depend if you play State of Origin. I think you both got potential. I do know, mate, down the track that he was more interested in Philip than me, but saw it as, if I take them both, I'm better chance of getting hold of my brother. The rest is history. We both went.
Yeah.
Philip in 94 was outstanding. Probably should have went on the Kangaroo Tour. I struggled. I snapped a cruciate. Lost a bit of my pace. And, I mean, my transition came sort of, a year later in 95 when I moved into the second row. But, 94, I played the whole year of first grade of fullback. The Penrith under Gus until he left for the last four rounds and went to the Roosters. Brandy came off the bench and either played at fullback or half. I'd go into the wing or in the centres. Gary Freeman was there as well. So, it was a difficult time for the club on the back of what happened to Penrith and to Greg Alexander and the loss of his brother, which is devastating, mate. That the club struggled, and that was the catalyst, in essence, for Brandy to go to the Warriors, mate. In 95, he needed to just get away and sort of refresh and reflect, I guess. And, it's nice to still have that relationship with Greg as well. But, as I said, Philip evolved, and he probably should have went on that 94 Kangaroo Tour. He had a lot more ability than I did, but Philip was always the first to want to have a beer with somebody, or he's just that sort of guy. And mate, people still today run into me and say, mate, your brother was the nicest bloke I've ever met.
Nice.
He's still that sort of bloke. But he loved having a beer. That was more important to him than his footy, his natural ability. As we know, mate, only carries you so far before you need to be committed and dedicated in other areas of your game.
Yeah, now, Matty, I've got a second one. Now, this is a footy card that I found, mate, of you. I'm pretty sure it's 93 or 94. Now, we'll talk about your transition in a second, but people don't realise, you did mention that you were a fullback, but you had a huge left boot on you too, mate. You used to take a lot of kicks for touch and some general play stuff as well. Talk to me a little bit about your kicking game.
Mate, we were a very poor family. I was lucky enough, I can't remember what age I was, but mum and dad bought me a Leatherstone rugby league football for Christmas. So I used to get a six-stitch and they were $9. I think the Leatherstone football probably cost mum and dad about $30. So that came with great cherish and respect and honour that mum and dad did that for me for Christmas, even though I thought it came from Santa. So to get it from my property to the spare block across the Bitumen Road was around about 50 metres. So if I didn't kick it 50 metres, it'd land on the bitumen and it'd scratch the leather off the student, which I knew from mum and dad's point of view would be detrimental and disrespectful to such a nice gift. So that's how I learnt to kick, time the ball, belt the ball, get it across to the spare block so it landed on the grass and didn't get damaged.
Nice. Now, mate, let's talk transition, because for an outside back or a fullback, sometimes it can be a tough conversation to say that you're moving into the forwards. I guess luckily for you, you were blessed with good genetics. But talk me through, was it Royce or Phil that made you transition?
No, it was me. I went to Simo and we were struggling for forwards. We had a lot of injuries. We didn't have much size in the pack. I was sort of in and out of reserve grade. It was in 95. And I said, I went to Simo and said, Simo, you know, I don't want to play reserve grade. I can't remember. It was fullback. I think Peter Jorgensen might have come to us from the Roosters or something like that. This is after having a knee reco. And I lost a bit of pace and my form was up to scratch. That's fair enough. And I went to Simo and said, I'll play in the forwards. Why don't you put me in the forwards if I get to play first grade? And he said, shut up, you fairy. You know, go back and just do what you got to do and blah, blah, blah. So that was a typical Simo comment. But I think what must have happened from me making that statement, he went to Lenny Stacker, who was Peter Mulholland at the time. Who was the assistant coach. And next bit, about half an hour later, Simo came back to me and he said, were you serious? And I said, of course I am. You know, I'll have a crack. You know, I was playing a bit of wing at the time, in and out, as I said, in and out of first grade. So it was a lot of that, you know, winger in type stuff. So your big body run into the forwards. I said, I'll give it a crack. So anyway, put me in the second row. We played the Broncos that particular day. We got belted. But, you know, my speed in the forwards in those days when you had Jalen Cairns and, you know, your Andrew G's and these sort of players, I was able to get the space quicker, you know, not quick enough for the backs, but had good speed for the forwards, mate. So I played really well, had a really good game, sort of shone in a defeated team. And Simo said, mate, maybe a future for you. So I stayed there.
Did you have any, like, did they bring a specialised coach in there for you?
No, not in those days, mate.
No.
It was just, I had blokes like Cardi and that. I think Cardi, as I said, mate, he was injured at the time. Or I think he went to Salford. So blokes like him, Barry Walker, Paul Clark, there were blokes there I could lean on to get advice and learn from, so which was good.
Nice. Now, mate, I've got another photo for you, and I know during your time you lived with these two blokes, Gowie and Gertz. Talk to me a little bit about your friendship and your bond that you shared with these two guys.
Well,
I don't know who this other guy got on there, but that's just a photo I found, mate.
Right, so obviously, mate, Gerds and Gowie are massive, you know. I kick myself every day, like, you know, life goes on, you get married, you have kids and that, but during those days, mate, there were no greater, you know, friendships and bonds with those two blokes. You know, Gerds and I lived together for 5 years, 6 years, whatever it was, and Gowie pretty much, once he started playing first grade, lived with us as well. You know, Freddie moved into Kent Street and lived in Packer's penthouse apartment, and we used to have a place to stay when we're at the city, but the three of us knocked around at my joint, you know, for 5 years at Borker Mills. And
were you like the big brother?
I cooked and cleaned, and I sort of, Gary will tell you, mate, I taught him how to cook. And when a guest comes over, you fold a towel, you put it on the bed. And I'll never forget when Amanda got married, I'd come up from the Raiders there when I was at the Raiders, and I said, oh, mate, I'd love to come and catch up with you, come and stay at your joint. So I went up to Penrith and I went in and he's got the towel on the end of the bed. And I said, and he just looked at me and smiled and I said, oh, well, isn't it great, you know, that sort of, that respect and that relationship. So, but mate, we did so many things together. We've shared so many wonderful memories together. But as I said, you know, distance and, I mean, I know Gowie and Gerds catch up a lot in Sydney, but being in Noosa sort of, you know, you lose contact, but we speak every now and again. And Billy Crichton, who's the, it was the major sponsor at the time through Senyo. Billy is up here at Noosa, so I catch up with him and Luz Ivanovic a bit. You know, he's well connected to those two boys, and our lives have gone on. We've all had daughters.
So, I wonder why.
that was life. But there was a couple of others. As I said, my brother was a part of that group, and so was Johnny Cross and Carl McNamara, mate. So we had a lot of good times together.
Good stuff. Now, mate, talk to me a little bit about Super League and kind of when they came on the scene. Why did you decide to sign with them?
Mate, because it was frigging awesome. Like,
what was the pitch?
So Graham Lowe rings me. He tried to get me to Manly a couple of times. I should have bloody gone, but... Mate, Graham Lowe rang me and said, "Matt, Super League, you heard the war's broken out. Yeah, mate, I have. Have you been contacted by anyone?" "No, I haven't." "Mate, come into, you know, whatever street it was, Park Street or whatever, where News Limited was. You know, I want to introduce you to someone." I go in, I meet Malcolm Nade. Malcolm Nade says, "Matt, sit down here and write down on a piece of paper how much money you want." Mate, I was on 80 grand at the time at Penrith. And he said, "I want you to write a sign-on bonus and an annual fee times it by how many years you want, 3, 4, whatever you want." I didn't know who Malcolm Nade was, and I'm just sitting there. So I'm sitting in this office petrified. Honestly, you know, you're sitting there going, what's this all about?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting there going, do I write 10,000 and 90,000, like 10,000 sign-on bonus, 90,000? Or do I be greedy and ask for 20 and 100? And I went, "Adam, you're not worth that. Stop being a joker. Like, don't be rude. Don't be disrespectful. You're sitting there thinking about the values your father brings you up on." And while I sat there pondering, the next minute he walked back in the room. He goes, "Have you written something down?" I said, "No, I haven't." And I was in a bind, mate. I'm thinking 10 to 20, mate. He wrote down 50, and he wrote down 250, 270, 290 or something like that. And, mate, how do you say it? Like, seriously. And all the NRL blokes, the wings, or the RL blokes, the wings are carrying on like half-wits. Mate, if it wasn't for Rupert Murdoch, they wouldn't be living in the homes they're living in today. They should have all been kissing Rupert Murdoch's ass. It was only what he did that then inspired Packer to get off his ass and go and do what he did, which created the war. Let's be honest. The beneficiary, mate, were all us players, honestly. You know, and I thank Rupert Murdoch, I thank Lachlan Murdoch, I thank everyone forever and a day, because that gave me the start in life that's, you know, given me my wife and my kids the life it is. And I'm sorry, it has, it's as simple as that. And I'm grateful for it, mate. And Super League for me was so exciting because it was a visionary. You know, I thought it was bigger and going to be bigger and better. And, mate, it was. We had the World Club Challenge with Penrith. You know, I was lucky enough to tour the Australian team and things like that. It was a great concept, but it was even better that the game came back together because the game had to. You know, it was important, but that was my journey. And I went home to Gerds, and Gerds was like, "I got this big smile on my face." And I throw this $50,000 Commonwealth Bank check at him, and Gerds goes, "What's going on?" I said, "Mate, here's Graham Lowe's number. Give him a ring." Gerds got his car. He went in, he got the same thing, and he came home. We celebrated.
So. Yeah, good. Matty, like, for me, 97 was your breakout year, but for you personally, do you feel that was the year that really established you as an elite player?
Yeah, but that sort of money then allowed me to employ a full-time personal coach.
Okay.
So I started to learn more about the science of the game, the nutrition of the game, recovery part of the game. You know, I'd already started to have some knee injuries, as I mentioned earlier. But I employed a guy called George Essamides, who I met through Gary Freeman. He was a bodybuilder, and George today is still the greatest mate. And I gave him my first Australian jersey because of what he did for me. But he trained me. He shaped me into the athlete I was physically. You know, blokes were always like, what's Matty on? You know, but he just educated me on how to eat properly and how to train properly, how to grow muscle bodies, and you know, how to be full for game day and how to make sure you're mentally and physically, emotionally ready for game day. So I can't thank Georgie Essamides, you know, he's based in the UK these days, but enough for what he did and educated me. He was just a Parramatta guy who worked at a gym. We used to go up to Castle Hill gym up on Castle Road. I'd train all day with Penrith, and I'd come home, I'd shower, and I'd get in the car and I'd go and train with George. And all my teammates thought I was mad, but I just was so obsessed with fitness and strength and durability and learning more about myself and that. But it was just the catalyst for why, you know, you've said, mate, that you felt 97 was a breakout year. I became a better player because I was physically prepared, mentally prepared before games because, mate, no one ever educated me on that in the prior seasons I played rugby league.
Yeah, mate, you know, like mentally upstairs, like when you're in this zone where you're doing all this training and it's coming off on the field, what's the confidence level like?
Yeah, that was what gave me a breakout season, buddy, because I was in control of how I felt emotionally in my mind, you know. So it was all about preparation.
Yeah.
How I prepared allowed me to perform. which incorporated everything from what I ate, how I ate, when I ate, you know, how I slept, how I recovered, hot and colds, all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, well above and before that sort of came into the game, I was doing that through, you know, what I've been educated from George. So I was stronger, I was more powerful, I was more explosive off the mark because I was physically ready to go.
Yeah. I still remember in 97, mate, because I'm a Shark supporter. And, Dad, yep. There was a Sunday afternoon, I think both teams were undefeated, start of the season, three or four games in, and all of a sudden, we're the hot shots. Everyone was, apart from Brisbane, they were going Sharks next and then daylight. And then you touched us up at Penrith Park, like absolutely smashed us. It was Gowie, yourself, Brandy went nuts, Gerds went nuts, everyone went nuts. I think you beat us by about 40. I'm not sure if you remember that game, but for me, that was a standout. And I think only Brandy getting injured during that Tri-Nations really robbed you guys, I feel.
Massively. Yeah, hurt us, mate. You know, big time. Gary did a great job as a young 18-year-old kid to step into that number seven role. We played that semi-final. We, you know, beat Canterbury at that game where there was riots and, you know, and chaos and so forth. But, yeah, look, if Brandy stays on the pitch, we may have gone a little bit further. You know, who knows? But, you know, it is what it is and that's the game. But, yeah, mate, it was a great year. Really enjoyed it. And, of course, then the three of us, Kurtz, Gowie and I, went off on the Super League tour, mate, which was, yeah, again, just so many wonderful memories. We all paid for our parents to go over and watch us and be a part of it, which, you know, again, I'm sorry, but that's what Super League allowed us to do. You couldn't pay for your mum and dad to fly to England for, you know, 4 weeks and watch your son, but Super League allowed that to happen, mate. So, again, I'm never going to bag the Super League war. I'm only just grateful for it, bud.
Yeah, some great tests at the end of that season too, but, like, that was a time when British Rugby League was still very, very strong.
Mate, those test teams those teams were full on. They were good. They had some, you know, world-class talent, Jason Robinson's, Andy Farrell's, Brian McDermott, Barry McDermott, you know, Jimmy Lowe's, some, you know, top-class players. And, of course, a few years on, mate, I played against all these boys, Chewy Field and Jamie Peacock, you know, Paul Newlock. They were strong. You know, Gary Connolly, some top-class English players. As I said, mate, I was lucky enough then a few years on to then play against those guys.
Yeah.
You know, week to week in Super League.
Yeah, how'd you find? I've struck a bit of a friendship with big Barry McDermott, mate. How was Bazza when you got to Leeds?
But Leeds for me was the greatest 3 years of my life, honestly. Gary Hetherington, Paul Caddick, the two owners, and Gary obviously being the CEO, just phenomenal, buddy. We had a wonderful time, my wife and I. We went over there with our first daughter, Charlotte. Our second daughter was born in Leeds. We just had a wonderful time. I had a great relationship with the fans. I love the club. I'd go back there tomorrow and make cups of tea for the joint. I'm passionate about Leeds because the fans were passionate, the club were passionate. Gary's an inspiration. He's virtually like a second dad to me and was and treated me that way, you know, treated me with great respect.
Well, Gary Hetherington first approached me to go to Leeds. I mean, as I said, one of my greatest motivations because growing up in a small country town like Taree, you watched your weekend rugby league or the ABC, and in those days you had your free-to-air TV. The Challenge Cup was always, you know, viewed either on, you know, I think it was the ABC back in those days. And your dad would wake up in the middle of the night, so, you know, son, come on, cheers. So there's a burning ambition to win a Challenge Cup. And there still is. Not as a player, but in some capacity, you know. And you never give up the dream. And I've always been that sort of bloke. So, you know, to go across to Leeds when Gary Hetherington gave me the opportunity, one of my burning desires was to play in a Challenge Cup, first and foremost, because you can obviously do that before you can win one.
Yeah.
So, it was in our second year, obviously our first year under Darryl Powell, we had a challenging year. There was a bit of a transitional period in year two, which was 2003, with Powell there in his second year, the group grew. Some international imports came in, a couple of English players left and went to other clubs, with guys like Marcus Byrne, Ali Lauatini and Dave Ferner and these sorts of guys coming to the club, helped grow the culture that we're trying to create, you know. And I was sort of a bit of a one-man band because I knew one, we had Bernie Walker and Tony Carroll there, and then things didn't work out for those boys and they wanted to head home. So you lose a bit of that continuity in regards to the culture we're trying to build. There's nothing wrong with the external and, you know, the management of the organisation, phenomenal. I think I said that last time about Gary Hetherington and Paul Caddick. So Fernsey and Andrew Dooneman and Adrian Mowles and these guys, Willie Poaching, everyone started buying in. The English young guys, your Danny McGuire's, your Rob Burrows, your Kevin Sinfield, your Mike Caldwell, your Chev Walkers, and these type of guys, got what we were trying to create. Yeah, everyone had to be on the same page. We all had to be committed. We all had to go and have a coffee after training. We had to do things and sacrifice the little things to make it a successful journey for what we're trying to create. And they did, mate. You had a great year. We made that Challenge Cup final. And, of course, mate, we led in the prelim final with seconds to go. And Carney, the Irish winger, who was a Wigan, I'm just trying to
remember his first
time. He played
Brian
at Newcastle. Brian.
Yeah.
Brian Carney. Mate, he brought us caught under a bit of try with like seconds to go and just took the win from underneath us, mate, which was heartbreaking, you know. And of course, then they went to the grand final. We didn't. But, of course, the following year, mate, we did. You know, the difference there was that Tony Smith came in from Powley and the squad was the same and we went the next step the year later.
Yeah, Matty, you know, you talked about kind of the mix of the English, the Kiwis and the Aussies when you go over to the Super League. Is that one of the good things? Because, you know, when you're playing Australia, like, 99% of your teams are Aussie, right? But you get that cultural sort of influence and how different people are. Is it harder to integrate a culture or is it easier?
No, it's harder, mate. And I'll tell you why. You have to respect where we are. So we couldn't go over there and say, in Australia, we do this. You know, in Australia, we do this. Because there's obviously that bit of rivalry too that's been built over many, many years in Test Match footy.
Yep.
You know, so you had to walk in and have acceptance. You had to have acceptance is the word I use. I went to Leeds and I accepted Gary Heatherington and I accepted the Barry McDermott's of the world. And these sort of guys have been there and, you know, they had their own stigma in the game and they were, you know, high-profile players. And so there's a high level of respect that had to go first and foremost. And it's about management. It's about, obviously, managing what you want to try and instill and create and change to obviously get success. And if there's some negative things, you've got to get that out of the way. And there was all that, TK. There was all those things.
Yeah.
It's hard to use the smarts about, you know. Yeah, and I should say, a strong personality. And I had a big influence in the dressing room and helping those younger kids understand what success and winning is all about. Yeah, you got to remember, mate, I hadn't achieved that success. And so I went there with a burning ambition to win, you know, and be successful. So to create that culture was challenging, but the right people, the right personalities from both the Australian, Kiwi and the English mix. And, of course, when you got people like Kevin Sinfield and your Danny McGuire's and your Robbie Burrows and these guys, mate, in the club who were young and ambitious and wanted to listen and learn, you know, it made it quite an easy transition. Of course, they continued that legacy for another decade.
Yeah, that, you know, that role that you took with Leeds those 3 years you were there and then, obviously, you know, that final year with Canberra as well, you were a massive leadership role there. Is that something that you really enjoyed in comparison to the rest of your career?
Yeah, and it's a natural thing. I think we took it on early at Penrith because we lost a lot of our senior players. You know, Freddie went to the Roosters, Cardi went to England, MG retired, Brandy retired, and all of a sudden Gerds, Carl Mack and myself, my brother, and an 18-year-old Craig Gow become the leaders within the club.
Yeah.
You know, so I enjoyed it because I always feel, and I still do today, even in business, mate, I'm always doing it for the benefit of the brand. And I spoke about that in the Manchester United's, you know, story I talked about. You know, even here in my business in Noosa, you know, Noosa has Motel, the brand's the most important thing, not myself or not, you know, one of my staff. It's the same principle I learnt in sport or, you know, you build in sport that, you know, I've instilled in my business culture. And I did the same when I had restaurants and cafes in Balmain in Sydney back in the day where I worked at Fox Sports and Channel 7.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like this morning I had Mark Nichols from the Rabbitohs on this morning and we're talking because he does, until recently, he was working part-time as a business development manager. But we're just having a little chat about kind of the skills because a lot of rugby league players don't realise that they do have some really transferable skills into the business world. If you could have a think now of just being a business owner and someone that runs a business, like what do you think are the main things that kind of cross over between sports and business?
Culture is obviously the first one. And I think I might have said it before. There's so many NRL clubs that still get that wrong, TK. It's first and foremost, mate, because, you know, I've listened over the years, you know, your Canterbury's, your Parramatta's, and obviously that was my first club and, yeah, even at Penrith, and you sit and listen to your Freddies and your Brandies and these sorts of guys. People always talk about people.
Yeah.
The game's very much structured systems and strategies and all these sorts of things today. And, mate, they're a massive. If you don't get your culture right, you know, Wayne Bennett, hey, Benny, what are you going to bring to the Dolphins? Great culture. It's the first thing he said. You know, people got to buy into. And he said, I know the people that will, you know, embrace what we're going to try and create. So he just goes and targets those guys. And that's smart business. Now, the bloke's been around 100 years and no insult to Wayne. I'm being very respectful because I have such admiration for him. But he's going in there knowing that he needs, you know, the Christian Walshes, if he can get them, and these type of people that's going to build, you know, a really strong culture in the club.
Yeah.
Because you get that first and then the other stuff takes care of itself. You know, without that, mate, I'll give you the analogy. I can make a bad player be successful in a really good team, but I can't make a great player who's an absolute arsehole successful.
It's interesting you brought up Christian Walsh because you made him captain when you were his 20s coach. And you know what? When I spoke to Christian, he's the one that got me into camp quality because that's what I do now, like after everything that he told me about. But tell me a little bit about Christian and your relationship back then.
I remember the first time I met him. I was sitting at my desk and he came in and he'd been up to Brisbane to see his family. He came back and just straight away, you know, he's a kid that has and shares the same values like my experience with, you know, human trafficking and rescuing kids from that. You know, we talked about that and I, you know, I still talk to I call him Skip, he calls coach still today, 7 years on, but he's just a beautiful person. He came from a family, really good values. His mum and dad are gorgeous people. He just ticks all the boxes, mate, what you want in regards to culture, you know, standards, and, of course, then, you know, ability. But I think you'll notice, TK, I've talked about culture, I've talked about standards and then his ability as the third instrument. You know, that's what's really special about a bloke like Christian Walsh. You cannot have enough Christian Walshes in your team because you know they're going to create that winning environment.
Yeah, you know when you got players that young, between that kind of 18 and 20 years old, Matty, is it hard to teach them leadership?
No, you just guide them, mate. You don't teach, well, yeah, teach or guide, be what it is. I mean, it's the same as, yeah, I get Cameron Munster as well at this exact same year, and you can tell he's got rough edges. He walks in, he's got his baseball cap round the wrong way, he's cheeky, he's rude, but it's with a bit of spunk, and it's a Craig Gower type personality, it's a Freddie Fittler type personality. So you know he's going to deliver through his actions. So it's about managing, you know, Cameron Munster and making sure that he understands that you've got to fit in, you've got to be a part of what about Cameron Munster, because it could have been about that for a long period of time. He was up playing under 18s or playing as an 18-year-old in Q Cup. So you just got to steer a guy like that and allow him to naturally gifted talent to just do what he's going to do. Where Christian Walsh, you see what he's got, see the values he's already got. He just helps create some boundaries around and shape his thoughts and feelings and emotions and maybe help him understand what to say at what time. But a lot of that comes naturally, mate. You know, your Cameron Munster analogy, I remember saying to Bellyache, I'm going to play this young bloke at 5'8". He's like, oh, you know, why are you thinking of doing that? I said, because, mate, he can do things I can't do.
Yeah.
He can do things I can't teach. And I said, not being rude, Bellyache, but I said, he can do things that probably you can't teach either. I said, because he's doing things that trainer, mate, that just sort of get you just go, wow, you know. And look, everyone's heard these stories to TK before, but they're true, mate, you know. So, and I said, I remember, and it's all life experience. I remember obviously playing with Darren Lockyer in the Australian team, and Lockyer is a fullback and goes on and plays 5'8". And I saw the similarities there. So I just said, look, I'm going to push him up to 5'8", help him defend better. You know, he came to us as a fullback, and he'll end up at fullback, but we'll make it, you know, 5'8". And of course, at the time, we played a very structured game. Cooper Cropp was halfback, and it was all about playing straight and direct. And, of course, Cameron wasn't that type of player. He was lateral. And I said, if it's okay, Craig, I'll just let him go. And, you know, Bill Axe said, mate, let him go and see what he does. And I think it was only 6 weeks. And, you know, we sent him up to Q Cup because, you know, he was tearing teams apart. We put him on a six-week program or a four-week program or whatever it was. And we brought him back to us for, I think, another four-week block. And he had 2 weeks that 20s level, and he just tore him apart. Like, he just had matured in that four-week process of being at Q Cup. But that's where that Melbourne Storm system and structures so detailed and so strong. And I use the word articulate in how you develop young players, which, mate, still today, I look at NRL clubs and I talk, you know, in my role now as a sort of player agent, other clubs, and some are just so far off. You're just going, what are you doing? You know, you just got it so wrong.
Yeah, Matty, when you, because you were responsible for finding Harry Grant, right? You spotted him.
Yep.
When you're spotting a young player, just say they're 13, 14 years old, when they're getting a little bit of attention from everywhere, like, you know, you just talked about the Storm system and how, you know, at the end of the day, from what I've seen, looks like the Storm put a lot of emphasis on good people. Like, what's the process for when you, just say you identify a 14-year-old Harry Grant, like, what are you looking for?
Yeah, let me correct that, mate. I still believe 14-year-olds shouldn't allowed to be scouted. Yeah. I just said 14-year-old kids, 15-year-old kids should be left alone in their local districts and areas and be developed naturally. I don't have an issue with a mentor-type system where people can come in and start to interact with those type of kids, but to sign them up to player agencies or clubs, for me, TK is not my cup of tea, to be 100% honest. I think we need them to be mature enough. And look, some 16-year-old kids mentally still aren't mature enough, but that's another argument for another story. But in regards to the question, I had a sole purpose when I came to Queensland here and now today as the Queensland coaching director for the Melbourne Storm to find a 7, a 6, and a 1, and a centre. You know, we needed a young, high-class centre. So the four kids were Harry Grant, Brodie Croft, Scott Drinkwater, and Curtis Scott were the four kids that, in my time as the Queensland coaching director, that I signed. You know, I guess every scout or every recruitment guy or list management, you know, whatever your title is, you know, whatever you think your skill set is, I go and look for something that I tend to think another person's not going to look for, you know. So, like, when I found Harry or when I spotted Harry, I looked at the fact that when Harry, every time you went to the ruck, and that means, mate, when you go to the game, you have to go and position yourself in a certain position on the field to see what you're looking for.
Yep.
And I just wanted to see that Harry's eyes were up every time you went to a ruck. A lot of kids, you know, their eyes are looking, you know, they're 7 or they're dominant. So Harry was just consistently looking in front of him. Didn't mean he was going to run every time, but he just had his eyes up. So it's a simple training. Of course, then you look at his passing ability. You know, so your first interaction is like a girl in a bar. It's like, okay, yeah, this kid can play. This kid's got that skill. You know, let's go and meet mum and dad. Let's understand his background. Let's understand the type of kid he is.
Yep.
Is the kid resilient? Has he had some setback in life? You know, mum and dad supported him, and mum and dad going to take him through this next journey. So that was the process. You know, I went on with Harry, and Harry was a challenging one in the sense that his brother had been to Parramatta, had some real disappointment. Mum and dad weren't. Well, mum and dad were reluctant to let him come to Melbourne. I said, well, let's bring him down to, you know, Noosa or Pridgent where I live, and let's let him live with myself, my wife and my daughters, and I'll put him into a camp type situation. I ran camps up here for the Falcons and East Tigers, which is a part of the Melbourne Storm Development Academy system, and Harry lived with us. And, you know, I got to know the kid got to know me, and at that stage it was more about showing his father, you know, Paul, that he was yeah, that we were doing the right thing, and we had the kids' best interests at heart, which just comes from, you know, me and my role. And, you know, by the end of that camp period, that Paul and Harry's mum were happy for the kid to sign us. And the same process, mate, was used on, you know, Brodie Croft and Scotty Drinkwater and Curtis Scott, although all their very different personalities, mate. My approach was the same. I mean, Curtis was, you know, came from a very different dynamic. Our mum and dad had separated, things like that. But you just, I had a step-by-step process in regards to what I was trying to achieve in signing those, you know, four kids.
Yeah, for sure. Now, last topic I want to talk to you about, Matty, is just yourself personally, retirement. Like, when you decided that, because you went that one last season with Canberra, but did you have much planning in terms of, like, what you would do after footy?
No, it's the biggest mistake still in our game today, I believe, TK. I have this sort of analogy around my passion and love for country rugby league, being a country kid, that you know, the NRL could put a program in place, and this would have suited a bloke like myself. I mean, I was lucky. My first coaching job was at the Catalan Dragons out of Plain. I went and did a strength addition course. And look, you got to look at life in general, think yourself, well, I was at the Raiders, I had access to Institute of Sport, I had access to different, study groups and programs down there. So in that final year, it was all of a sudden, it was like somebody planted the seed, Matty, would you like to come back and be strength and conditioning coach? Holy dooly, got to go and do, you know, I love strength and conditioning, I love training. I love weights. I was a gym junkie, all that sort of thing. But I didn't understand the science and all the articulation that come with it. So off you go, do a course, study it, get your certificates, and I get a job. In regards back to country rugby league, you know, the simple program for me is any NRL player that's retiring that would like to go into a system type structure,
yeah,
where you go, hey mate, here's 100k for 2 years, go out to Dubbo, go to Taree, go to Port Macquarie, go to Wagga Wagga, go wherever it is, and you're going to promote the game, you're going to, you know, be a community based person, so you give them back,
yep,
give them back to the community. That you don't have to be from there. You know, you just start to create a bit of a strategy and a pathway for these players at a time, because I potentially believe today that blokes are still retiring going, holy dooly, what am I going to do now? I still talk to blokes my age and go, who are coaching.
Yep.
I'm going, what are you going to do when coaching is over for you? You know, well, Matty, I haven't thought of that. I said, yeah, I was one of them too. You know, I didn't really think of it either, you know, which is when I jumped into restaurants and cafes and went, never cooked a meal in my life, TK. It was like, this sounds like fun. It's like buying a resort new, so I've never run a resort before, but I'll give it a go anyway. So
I
just think if we created that bit of pathway, and it could be done in New Zealand, it could be done everywhere, you know, where a guy goes out, captain coaches, because I've seen it with, you know, Johnny Cross is a good mate of mine. He went up to Wilgoolga in Group 2 and he did that. And it just creates such a stimulation in the community, creates stimulation within the group, whether it be Group 2, Group 3, Group 11, Group 9, whatever. And of course, having an NRL player there creates interest. It does amazing things for community. And I just think it gives players a transitional period to start to think about and go, hey, in a minute, well, I'm back out the real world. Now I'm not earning 600 or 500 or 400 or 300. I'm only earning 100.
Yeah.
Holy sugar, my financial situation is very different. Holy dooly, life's starting to slip me by. Holy dooly, there's not 40,000 in the stands anymore. There's only 1,400. That reality in life may just hit you in the face. And unless you've got, and I'm grateful to my wife, and I've got, you know, gorgeous three beautiful daughters, you know, they have that support mechanism around me as well, mate. And our road, TK, has been a roller coaster, mate. Trust me, it hasn't been clean sailing. You know, Becky and my kids have, you know, stood strong with me and dad, and I've got a beautiful mum and dad that still support me, you know, through thick and thin. I've got a great brother who does as well. I mean, his life's been a lot tougher than mine, external to rugby league, TK, than mine has. And, you know, but we grow from it. And I just think that would really help, you know, these players that you retire, that they have don't get that last game and then all of a sudden go, what do I do now? You know, we can jump on it sort of, you know, around early in the year, you know, and just say, listen, mate, let's start thinking about our country-based program or whatever we want to call it. You know, there's opportunity in Batemans Bay, there's opportunity in Dubbo, there's opportunities in Taree, there's opportunities in Lismore.
Yep.
You go and coach your local team, go and do stuff in schools, talk about mental health, go and talk about all the things that rugby league is about and help that player transition into normality.
Yeah.
Because the rugby league bubble and normality is a big gap, mate, massive gap.
Yeah, I can imagine. Matty, when you first retired, and maybe even now, did you miss, because you played in Origin games, you played in big games for Penrith, who, like, for a Sydney team, you literally are a one-team town. And then, obviously, you went to Challenge Cups and all big games in England. Did you find it hard to replace that thrill of playing in front of those big crowds?
And I still do, mate. You know, I still do. I won't call it adrenaline. It's not adrenaline for me because I hate getting in fast cars and all that sort of stuff. But just that environment, mate, of being around your mates, of being around, you know, that winning feeling, even the losing feeling, mate, because the losing feeling allows you to pick yourself up and go again. I guess, and I'm finding myself even at 49 years of age, those habits are inbred in your, you know, I guess your neurological pathways. It's the same. You have a bad day at work, pick yourself back up and go again the next day. And, you know, you help educate your kids. My kids are now transitioning into working life, and the eldest daughter's starting to be a primary school teacher. Their middle daughter's a famous model, is on every Lorna Jane billboard and every Lorna Jane shop across the whole of Australia. But,
okay,
you know, which is massive for her. But, you know, she's quite a mature kid for an 18-year-old. She's sitting there, she's going, oh, dad will all be over by the time I'm 24. He's only 18. But I said, well, really, just enjoy the ride while you're at it. Like, people are sending me photos from all over, you know, Asia and Singapore going, oh, is this your daughter, Maddie? I'm like, yeah, lucky she looks like a mother. So, you know. So,
But you want to give your kids resilience, mate. You want to give your kids the understanding that life's not going to be just some easy journey, because it's not, you know. And again, winning and losing creates that in rugby league, and so does life in general. You know, being a dad, being a husband, and now being in business.
Yeah, well said. All right, to wrap things up, Matty, I just have my dinner party question. You've got 5 invites to a private dinner party. Now, only rules, Matty, no family or friends, but you can invite anyone dead or alive. Who would you like to invite to dinner?
Yes, the first one I'm inviting is Roy Keane.
Yep, your main man.
Manchester United captain and legend. The next person I'm inviting is Sylvester Stallone.
Mate, I just, you know what, last night, have you watched the new Rocky IV? They recut it. It's good.
Mate, that one I'll be watching as soon as I get 5 minutes.
Mate, the way he's done he's cut the robot out, and he's cut all sorts of, all the kind of popcorn stuff you can imagine from 1985, he's cut out of the movie. And there's all these new scenes that have been put in. It's good.
Yeah, okay. Because he was my idol, mate. Look, I was one of those kids that dreamed, and as was Wayne Pierce, but Rocky Balboa was that, down on your luck, pick yourself up, go again type bloke. And I guess a lot of what I did in life is around that. I'd invite Mark Waugh, because Mark Waugh was another huge inspiration for me as a young kid because of my cricketing background.
Yep.
I'd invite Hugh Grant.
Hugh Grant.
Okay. Yeah. I think Hugh Grant's quite a quirky character. And the role he played in Love Actually makes me laugh and giggle. Whenever I have a bit of a downer, I'll throw in a Hugh Grant film any given day. And, mate, the other bloke I invite is Freddie.
Nice. Okay.
And I'll tell you why, because Brad Fittler's just one of the nicest blokes you ever meet. And I know... in life, even today, if I'm having a tough time or things are not, right for me, I can just send Freddie a text and he'll respond or reply. Not saying other blokes don't, but I just, I guess when you meet Brad Fittler at 18 years of age, TK, and you see what he's, things weren't a lot easy for Brad Fittler at a young age either, mate, and where Freddie was and where he's got to, and he's, his beautiful wife Marie and his kids, and I just have such admiration and respect. I do for all my teammates, don't get me wrong, but just when I see Freddie on a TV game and he's their commentator, I just think, wow, everything where Freddie started and where he is today is an incredible story. You could really make a movie about it, and Hugh Grant could potentially be in it. Sylvester Stallone could potentially direct it.
Well, Matty, appreciate you sharing all the stories and all the insights, mate. Before I let you leave, give your motel a bit of a plug, because I know a lot of people are going to be going on holidays and a lot of people will be coming up to Noosa, mate. So let the people know what it is.
Hey, so I bought Noosa Heads Motel along with a good footy mate of mine in rugby league, and his wife and my wife are really close.
Yep.
So he's a shareholder in this business, and, mate, 6 months ago when we took it over, it was a bit of a dog's breakfast, to be honest. It was one of those typical old motels that, but in regards to its location, we're 600 metres to Hastings Street, which is the be-all and end-all of Noosa, the beach and all the big resorts and restaurants. We're just a nice little boutique motel, or as my daughter says, that it's bougie, whatever bougie means. I still don't quite know exactly what bougie means, but... and, mate, we're 200 metres to Noosa Junction, so we sit in a beautiful location in Noosa Drive, 71 Noosa Drive. Noosa Heads, as I said, we're only 600 metres to the beach, and as I said, it's just a really nice price point. Jump online, have a look. If people want to come up, just bring me direct. Don't go through booking agents, and Big Matty will look after you.
Mate, I love it. I can't wait for those borders to open, because I'll be up there and we can share a beer, mate, down at the Surfy.
And, mate, so do we. I'm so pining for some New South Wales mateship to come up here and hang out. It'll be really good. So it's been really great talking to you, buddy. I really appreciate what you do for rugby league and so many ex-players, I guess, like me, to go and express feelings and emotions of what we've done and, the highs and lows of our rugby league career. I really think the platform you create, mate, is awesome, and I take that off to you and commend you. And we need more blokes like you in our, speaking positive about our game.
No, I appreciate that, Matty, and I appreciate you jumping on, mate, and I can't wait to see you in person with that beer in front of us both, bud.
All right, I'll have a room ready for you, mate. You let me know.
Sounds good.